Hi, I'm Marion McPartland. My guest today is bassist-composer Ron Carter. He's one of the most original, prolific, and influential players on the jazz scene. In fact, he's the epitome of class and elegance. How are you?
I'm doing great. After the introduction, I have to say I'm doing okay.
Well, you've always been doing okay, as far as I know.
Thank you.
I was trying to remember. I did remember, in fact, the first time we played together was in Connecticut years ago, and I think it was at the university somewhere.
Yes, one of the early jazz festivals up there, I think.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I was sort of beginning, and I was kind of shy of you. Don't laugh, it's true.
Wow.
I was.
Yeah. You sure sound great, Marion, still these days after all those courses you play. You still find a way to make it sound good, and I love that.
Well, thank you. Well, why don't we play a tune?
Okay. You know, I've been an Oscar Pettiford fan for a very long time, and it's nice to see that he's getting rediscovered through reissues and compendiums and repackaging of all his music from the late 50s up until his passing. So how about playing one of his songs he recorded? He called it Blues in the Closet. Bud Powell called it Black Eyed Peas and Collard Greens.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, but, the record he made with George Vivier and Arthur Taylor. The record's called Glass Enclosure with Bud Powell. But let's play this one.
I remember
Blues in the Closet.
That.
Let's give it a shot. Let's see what happens.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you.
It's funny. Something about his tunes are fun to play. They've got a sort of cheerful vibe.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that makes him easy to play is that it's a bass player writing for the instrument.
Yes, that's true.
Who knows what the bass can do physically, you know, and it just lays comfortably in the area that anyone can play them and have some comfortable results.
That's true. Yeah. By the way, Oscar Pettiford used to come in the Hickory House and sit in with me all the time.
Wow.
Well, yeah, I was the lucky one.
I can imagine, yeah.
That's how I got to play these tunes a little bit.
Well,
so.
You heard him from the source.
Well, he used to just walk in. I mean, I guess I let it be known that it was okay. You know, people would just walk in and sit in.
Yeah.
And he was one that would do that a lot.
You take advantage of the opportunity.
Well, it was nice for me. It taught me a lot, you know.
Yeah.
So, anyway, back to you. And how did you get started? I read where you started as a kid on cello.
Yeah, when I was 10 years old, back then, they had music in the public schools. And
they did.
Oh, yes. That was way before television.
Well.
And she did it, orchestra director brought in an array of instruments, and she said, okay, now here are these instruments for you. Whatever you pick, you're going to have to learn how to play it. And the cello just seemed to be the right sound at the time for me, given what was available, you know. And so I played it for
You didn't really know anything about it? I mean, you
no.
just...
No. Okay. First one I'd ever seen, other than a picture in a magazine or in the music magazines at school. But no, I just thought that for as crude as the sound was that I was getting, it had to get better. You know.
But that's interesting that you stuck with it. You didn't just say, well, I don't really want to play this old instrument.
No.
Or I guess you had to do it.
Well, you know, when you have kids who are the same age who are interested in making music and you're 10 years old, it's like a clubhouse.
Yeah.
You know, we never saw it as a chore or something that we really didn't want to do, but we were kind of stuck with it. We all saw it as another way to have fun and making music, you know.
Was this when you were living in Ferndale,
yeah.
Michigan?
Yeah. And then when I got to high school, Cass Tech.
I know that school.
Yeah. The school would kind of have small events, and they would hire kids from the orchestra to play these PTA events or music conventions, stuff like that. And I thought that I wasn't getting my share of those kinds of calls as a cello player. And I looked around and there was no bass player. He'd just graduated. So I said, okay, if I play the bass, then they'll have to call me for these jobs. So I switched to bass January of 1955.
Oh, my goodness.
And came to New York August of 1959.
But you got a degree, I think I read you.
Yeah, got a bachelor's in music.
From
Eastman.
Eastman.
Mm-hmm. And I came to New York in 59 of August and joined Chico Hamilton's band with Eric Dolphy in it for 4 months or so. And then Chico moved back to California to spend more time there, and Eric moved to New York to spend more time in New York.
So there went your group?
Yeah, but I enrolled in Manhattan School of Music for a master's and got a degree in 1961. And I decided that...
swinging.
I tried to make it work. So I played with Randy Weston for about a year. And
well, about, let's see, time. I'm trying to figure how old you were then. You were in your 20s?
23, something like that.
Boy.
Yeah. Just a spring chicken in New York.
Right. Listen, we've got to play more.
Okay.
You've got another record called Stardust.
Yes, with Benny Golson on tenor, Joe Locke on vibes, Sir Roland Hanna on piano.
Sad about him.
Yes. Lenny White on drums and myself. Several Oscar Pettiford tunes on this record. One of my favorite songs of his is what I call his signature tune, which is Stardust. And when you hear this record that we did at the last track of the record, and after the last note I play, it dies out, Roland Hanna says, yeah. And that makes it all worthwhile for me.
I heard that.
Yeah, that's great, yeah. So let's try Stardust and see what we can get going with this.
Can we do the verse?
Sure.
All right.
In D-flat.
In D-flat?
Yeah.
All right, let's Have at it. It's funny, so many people forget about that verse, and the verse is like a whole tune all by itself.
And it is very difficult, believe me.
It's difficult for the bass, you mean?
Yeah, the key is a strange key for bass.
Well, and also the melody kind of leaps around.
Yeah, it hops around pretty good, yeah. But Oscar made it sound so simple, everybody thought that it must be nothing to it, and what a mistake that was.
But so you thought you'd try it.
All you can do is not make it. Try it again. Yeah.
Well, you made it.
Thank you. It's beautiful. Thank you.
And it didn't sound the least bit rushed, and yet you played the whole verse and the whole chorus, and the whole thing just sounded very romantic actually.
Ooh,
okay. No, really. I remember, the first person I heard just do the verse was Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, did a great verse too. I've heard that recording. Fabulous, man. Just great sound.
And then I thought I'd try it, so I did, just for fun. Mm-hmm. Just for fun. Well, there's much more music in just a minute with my guest, Ron Carter. Our program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR, on the web at pianojazz.npr.org. Well, we're getting to the point where you went with Miles. That must have been a big deal.
Well, you know, at the time, 1963, that was the band to join. Everybody wanted to join the band.
It's funny, you went there and I went with Benny Goodman. I can tell you about that.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
I don't want to talk about that today, but
yeah, okay.
Marking dates.
Okay. I was working with Art Farmer at the Half Note down at Spring and Hudson, you know.
Oh, I love that room.
Nice room. I saw Train and Al and Cohen and Zoot Sims. Some great bands played there.
Yeah, they did.
And I was working with Art Farmer and Jim Hall and I think Walter Perkins. I had 2 weeks down there. And Miles came in the second night of the first week and called me over and said he was reforming the band, that Jimmy Cobb and Paul and Wendy had decided to leave to form a trio with West Montgomery. And he was going to California the next week, and he wanted me to join the band. So I explained to him, Mr. Davis, you know, not Miles, Mr. Davis.
You said Mr. Davis?
Yeah. I'm working with Art Farmer for the next 2 weeks. So if you will ask Art Farmer to let me out of this week and the next week, I'm happy to go with you. But if Art feels that my presence is more needed on his gig than on your gig, then I'm happy to stay with Art. So after the next set, he and Art went to the corner, and Art decided it was okay for me to leave the band to go to join Miles for this 6-week West Coast tour. And that's how it started.
You must have been thrilled, or were you?
Well, I was a couple of things. First of all, I was really intent on showing Art Farmer my respect for him.
Yeah.
You know, that seemed to me at the time very important to do.
Yes, you know? Right.
And while Miles had the gig that everyone aspired to, so there's an order of courtesy that's necessary.
Oh, that's true.
You know, and once I got over that.
Well, he was evidently a good sport about it.
Yeah, yeah. It dawned on me that I'm playing with a band that everybody wants to be a part of. You know, and the band at that time was Harold Strozier on alto saxophone.
Who?
Harold Strozier. The first band that went out from New York in March of 63 was a sextet.
Yeah.
Jimmy Cobb stayed on drums to finish out his part of the tour. Miles. Harold Mayburn played piano.
Oh, yeah.
George Coleman played tenor. Frank Strozier played alto, and I was a bass player for the 6-week West Coast tour.
Wow.
And after the tour was finished, Harold and Jimmy Cobb and Frank came back to New York, Frank Strozier, and Miles hired Victor Feldman, pianist, and
yes.
Frank Butler to do the first half of their first new quintet record, Seven Steps to Heaven.
Nice record.
Yeah, yeah. Nice sound, too.
Great. He was in, I don't know, just thinking about how he went from one kind of playing to another. That was a particular kind of playing of his that I really liked.
Mm-hmm.
And that was how you really got your feet wet with Miles. And
yes. Yeah. At the time, everyone was playing his library. I mean, everybody knew the intro to Bye Bye Blackbird, all the piano players had to play that, you know. And
oh, sure.
Everybody had to play the stops behind the saxophone solo that they played on Milestones. I mean, we all knew the Miles Library. And to be asked to join that environment was quite a treat.
I can imagine.
Gives me chills right now.
Well, I'm just trying to think how much later on that was when he came out with Kind of Blue.
Well, Kind of Blue was officially like 59, I think. The record was issued then.
You went with that band?
No, I went to put the band subsequent to that with Herbie Hancock and Tony Williams and Wayne Shorter.
That's where you went?
Yeah, after the band came back to New York.
You just went with one big group and another, didn't you?
Tom, just give me the ticket and I'll meet you at the airport. We can do this.
You must have been getting pretty used to all these great people calling you up.
Well,
did you ever get nervous or think, gee, maybe I can't make this?
No, I never felt that I didn't belong there.
That's great.
No, I thought that if whoever calls me feels that I can help their project, then I belong there. I never felt that I was in over my head. And I'm 6'4", so it's a little difficult. In any event.
If you're going to get physical about it, yes, yeah. I wouldn't want to get in a scuffle with you, that's for sure. No.
I never felt that I didn't belong there. I felt that I had practiced, I'd earned my way, I'd studied, I'd played with wonderful players who I was able to learn from and add their knowledge to my growing base of information. And I felt comfortable to try to be able to deliver on the promise that they held for me.
I wish I could say I felt the same with Benny Goodman.
I heard some nice, not very nice things about him.
Well, we don't need to talk about that now, but some of them were funny. But I guess I did learn a lot from that. I went to the Menninger Psychiatric Institute after that.
Wow.
I always say Benny drove me there. It was a good thing. That's another show altogether.
Okay.
Anyway, we're sort of sliding towards another tune, aren't we?
Yeah. You know, one of Oscar's probably...
You mean Pettiford.
Oscar Pettiford. One of his probably most recorded songs is Bohemia After Dark, which is written, dedicated to Cafe Bohemia when it was downtown.
Right. I remember when he went down there.
Yeah. I was gone. I hadn't gotten to New York by that time, but some of the recordings that came out of there are just fabulous.
Yeah, I saw him there, which was nice. I was still at the Hickory House, and I hope I can... Well, let's play it, see what happens.
Okay, this is Oscar Pettiford's Bohemia After Dark.
Now, is this going to be in G minor?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, no point in fooling around anywhere else.
No fooling around.
Yeah.
I can't fool around on this tune.
Okay. Thank you.
I wish I knew more Oscar Pettiford tunes. What other ones are there that I should learn?
Tamalpais, one of the songs dedicated to one of the mountains out in the West Coast.
I don't know that one.
Oscalypso?
No.
Trichotism?
Yeah, that's right. I recorded it. I didn't know he wrote that.
Yeah, he wrote some nice songs.
That's a good one.
And they're easy to play for a bass player because they're written from a composer who knows the bass, who plays it every day. So when you kind of get that kind of concept, it's just a matter of trying to make it work for you, you know. Great songs.
Trichotism, that is a good song. I'm glad you brought those up. Those are good. Well, there's much more to come with this amazing bass player, Ron Carter. For more information about piano jazz and a list of the tunes played on today's program, visit our website, pianojazz.org. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. I'm going to do a solo for you.
Okay.
Could you stand that?
Sure. I'm sitting down.
Well, it's very easy to take. I thought I would do this tune by Hoagie Carmichael called New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
It might be good to dedicate to the Katrina people there.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Anyway, it's a nice tune.
I'd like to hear it. Thank you.
throw that in.
All right. Boy, that's a lovely version. Thank you.
That would make a nice bass solo next
yes,
time.
Yes, I have to kind of find that sheet music and see what it looks like. New Orleans.
New Orleans, yeah.
One of my songs along that New Orleans mindset is Basis Street, and my first exposure to actually playing that song was with the that band from the first half of the Seven Steps to Heaven record on Columbia with Miles Davis and Victor Feldman and Frank Butler. He played in C, I think, but boy, what an awakening to me of what this song can sound like in the hands of that kind of artist, Basin Street. Just since
well, it is, because people sort of put that tune in a certain category.
It's a Dixieland kind of sound. But when they hear this record, and I hear this kind of treatment that Victor Feldman voices those chords, it's just phenomenal. Great.
Well, it actually is a nice tune. I used to love the way Jimmy sang it. Dave McKenna called it non-singing, but he sang with a real jazzy sound on that particular tune.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We could play that, couldn't we?
Sure, but I'm not going to sing it. And let's try it in D-flat this time.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. that's Basin Street.
It's nice the way you did that. You led me into doing things.
You know, I think one of the fun things about being a bass player is that if you're confident in your ability and know some music, you can make those kinds of things take place.
It's great.
Yeah, it feels great to me, too.
Well, but the other person also has to be kind of listening for what is happening, and they don't go charging through
all
that.
That's why I carry
stuff.
A hammer in my bag here. You know, I carry a small hammer just to kind of bonk their foreheads if they don't pay attention.
Oh, my God. Well, that's so far, that hasn't happened.
I didn't expect it to either.
Well, I'm having a great time here with Ron Carter, and we'll have more music in just a minute. Our program is made possible in part by the Friends of Piano Jazz and is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. I'm Marian McPartland, and this is Piano Jazz from NPR. Visit us on the web and subscribe to our new podcast, Piano Jazz Shorts, on the web at pianojazz.npr.org. You know what I'd like to do, just for fun?
Okay.
Do, like, a musical portrait of you.
Wow. Ooh, okay.
Yeah, it might be a hard piece to play, but...
Let the notes fall where they may.
That's what I'm going to do.
Okay.
That's what I'm going to do.
Okay.
It'll be totally fresh.
Okay.
Here goes. Thank you.
Wow. And it's kind of like when you go to a museum, you know, and you have a favorite painter in mind, and this painter that you know has done what he thinks is a representation of you on canvas, you know. To see his view of you on a canvas is, can be really stunning and startling, that this is his image of you, you know. And when one hears a musical portrait of themselves, played so clear and so wonderfully as that you just played, it kind of makes me feel like I'm 4'3". You know, it kind of really is, it's a really humbling sound, and thank you very much.
I wanted to do something you'd like.
Thank you. You have done it.
Good. You've done it again.
Thank you.
It's such a shame all this has to end. I'm having such a good time with you, Ron.
Well, it can end on the radio, but we can always meet somewhere else and keep it going.
That's true. That's true. It's a good thought, too.
Thank you.
We're going to end with Miles Davis. So what?
And let's do this at somewhere between ridiculous and not so fast.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm with you.
Okay. Thank you.
I bet Miles liked it.
Well, you know, I think he'd like it faster, but I'm sure he'd appreciate it at this tempo.
Yes.
You've been listening to Piano Jazz with host Marian McPartland and her guest, Ron Carter. Join us again next week at this time when Marian welcomes another outstanding artist for an hour of conversation and improvisation. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson, recording engineer Duke Marcos, assistant recording engineer Tay Kim, mastering engineer David Mitchell, production coordinator David Lyon, executive producer Elaine Freeman. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Support for Piano Jazz comes from Fazioli Pianos, from the National Endowment for the Arts, Artworks, from the Friends of Piano Jazz, and from NPR. Support also comes from Jazz Times Magazine, delivering jazz news, insight, and opinion since 1970. Available at newsstands everywhere and on the web at jazztimes.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and NPR contributors, which include the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to a vigorous presence for poetry in American culture, poetryfoundation.org. This is NPR.